Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media and the World of Ink Network. This podcast was founded in 2011 by Marsha Casper Cook and Virginia Grenier. Their focus has always been on helping writers reach their dreams by having informative and entertaining shows. You will also hear the latest information on what's new and exciting in the publishing and marketing industry. And the shows will also cover discussions on screenwriting, audiobooks, and movies. New to the shows will be the latest style and trends in fashion, as well as nutrition, and how Pinterest can add just the right spark of attention you may need for your projects. So, sit back and relax and enjoy the show. You can find out more information about our shows and being a guest at www.michiganavenuemedia.com.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Okay, I covered everybody because I wanted to say this before I got a lovely guest. I said good afternoon. I said, no, it's evening. How late? Oh, it's 11:30. Okay, fine. So I'm covering everybody today. My name is Bennett Pomerantz. The show is Anything Goes. And I talk with authors and writers and media personalities. And I just wanted to tell you, the lady I have on this evening, I've had on before. She's an intelligent mystery writer. I've read other mystery writers, and I'm like, and? You know, it's like, she doesn't write romance. She writes mystery, and it's very good. Ladies and gentlemen, Jennifer Chase.
Hi, Bennett. Hi, everyone.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Good. I'm glad. Oh, and I hear the dog. Oh, I love him.
I'm sorry about that. I couldn't have an interview without the dog.
The dog is fine. I love the dog. I keep seeing on your Facebook pictures of the dog in the swimming pool. So that's,
yes.
You know. I can't wait.
They
kind of
go hand in hand.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he's kind of funny, you know. He's a German Shepherd breed, and you know, it's not like having a lab where they'll just do belly flops in your pool. So he's more about, I don't know if I trust this pool. So that's kind of where he's at right now.
Well, okay. Let me ask you a question that's been plaguing me. And it's plaguing me because, and I must be using the wrong word, but when you start on a mystery, do you have a preconceived notion, or do you do it, you know, dare I say, wing it, or what?
You're talking about an interview?
No, I'm talking a mystery. I'm talking a book.
A book. Well, you know, being a writer, and I'm sure a lot of writers can say this, is that there's always a mystery going on in our heads. We're always thinking about, you know, storylines, characters, clues, you know, bad guys. I don't do a lot of outlining. I do kind of a roadmap because things can change as you go along. Something will come to your mind and you'll go, oh, there's a better way of doing that. Or, ooh, I want to drop a red herring here. So I think, you know, basically my life is filled with mystery.
And what does your husband think about that?
Well, you know, we've been married for quite a while, so I think he thinks it's fine. But, yeah, I think being married to a writer is probably pretty tough. You've got ups and downs. And, you know, when you're on a deadline, it can get kind of intense. So, and you have to be left alone. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on, you know, with people who are married to writers, I think. I think they're special people, too.
Well, that's all that matters. But, okay, when you let's go this way. How much of the concept do you have before you get to paper? Because, and by the way, thank you. You have a competitor. Her name is Jennifer. She's also Jennifer. And she has asked, you know, how much I can't say clutter. Clutter is the wrong word. How much stuff do you have to get to before your book gets to being typed out, to being outlined?
Well,
I know
it's funny. I have kind of an overview just because I want to make sure that my story has enough, you know, grit to it. In other words, that there is definitely a story there. There is enough room to, you know, build it up, and you have enough clues sprinkled in. You have enough characters, but not too many. I have to say, I think I have a problem with sticky notes. I love sticky notes, and I use them for when I'm going through and, you know, kind of fleshing out certain scenes. I have sticky notes all over the place, and I move those around, and I get rid of some, and then I have a little bit of my outline. And I do, for the most part, know approximately how many chapters I'm going to have. So I kind of make sure it's kind of like a screenplay where you've got your setup, you've got the meat of the book, the metal part, and then how, you know, your twists and turns and, you know, the ending. So I don't know. I try not to use too much paper, but I think I probably keep the sticky notes factory, you know, in business.
Yeah. Oh, you and me both. I mean, I have enough sticky notes around my house.
I love them, and I had to start. It's funny. I had to start putting them up higher because I would come back to my desk, and I'm like, "What did I do with those?" And my dog, believe it or not, the same dog by the pool, he would move them. He didn't tear them up or eat them. You know, German Shepherds are very, you know, they've got their certain way of doing things, a little OCD, and he was moving my sticky notes for me. It was funny. I couldn't figure out for a while what was going on. There wasn't dog slobber on them or anything like that.
Sort of order or what?
Well, it made sense to him. It made sense to him, obviously. I don't know, you know, and they're in different colors, and I've always wondered, it's like, is he seeing? Because they're in different colors, you know, I have different things, like when it has to do with the clues, I want to make sure, you know, there isn't anything hanging there, because I know that's really annoying to readers if, well, what about that? You know, what about that clue? So I have kind of a clue pile and, you know, and then the suspects and things I'm moving around in the story. But
let me ask you, because it's been asked to me many times. Okay. You have your book done. Do you not leave red herrings, but do you leave extra clues for an upcoming book or for any further? What's the word I'm looking for? Now, it'll come to me in a minute, and it's a, you know. Go ahead.
You mean like leaving something that kind of lets readers go, I wonder if that's going to be in the next story, kind of like a little clue in there? Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
I hadn't really thought about that. This series I'm published with Bookator, and it's for three books, and they wanted to see. You know, I had to pitch all three books and everything to them, and one of the books actually will have a new character coming in that will be in the following book. So it was one of the first times I've really done that, and it'll kind of give, you know, readers an idea like, I wonder who that is. I wonder what's going to happen, but they will be a part of the next book.
But are you going to continue that character, or are you going to kill him? I'd say kill him off. Transfer him, kill him off. Whatever.
Well, you know, it's funny. People get really mad when you kill certain people off, and not main characters, but, you know, I do get some letters. This latest book in the Detective Katie Scott series, it was actually her aunt that was murdered in it, and her uncle becomes the prime suspect. And some people were a little mad, but then they forgave me as they read the book. So, but that's what, she wasn't a main character, but she was a lovely character, and so I think people got mad at me for killing her. But it did make the suspense a lot higher. It really ratcheted up things for her, for the main character, because being family, and she wasn't allowed to work on the investigation. But, of course, you know, she's going to find a way to, you know, try to find the killer herself. So, but that was the only time that people have gotten kind of just a little bit mad.
Well, okay. I'm not trying to tout your record. How many books do you have now out?
Let's see. 12. I'm sorry, I had to think about that for a minute.
I'm a thinker. There you go. But you have 12 books out, okay? Have you ever thought of getting a character you had in the, say, the third book and put it in the 13th book or the 14th book?
Oh, sure. It depends on the storyline. Some of the characters I've written, some of the supporting characters, I think, oh, you know, I really like these characters. You become really attached to them. And, in fact, in my Emily Stone series, the thriller series, I actually have a couple of novellas that they're a little bit, you know, rough draft, but each one of them is with a character that's been in the previous books, and it's a story that, you know, highlights them as well as Emily Stone, and that's why that came to me, because some of these characters were good characters. Little interesting, and then you never see them again. And I thought, well, what a great way, you know, to have kind of a spinoff where, you know, it highlights that character in a shorter, not a short story, but a novella. So you actually, you know, get to get into the book a little bit more.
Tony asks, how long does it take you to write a book?
Well, I've been pushing myself to the limit. I didn't think I could actually write a first draft in as little of time that I've done my last two books. I've had a lot going on in my life. I made a major move, and during that time I was writing a book and under contract. So I comfortably like to take about 2 months to write a manuscript. And my first draft is a pretty good draft. I spend a lot of time on it, but I have written a complete 90,000-word novel in 3.5 weeks. And I know some people are speedy and can do it. It's not my favorite to write that quickly. It's very stressful because you're writing a story with a lot of stress in it as well. So, you know, you want your readers to, you know, feel the stress and anxiety of your main character as they're, you know, going through, you know, the investigation and all these other things going on. So I wouldn't suggest being a speedy 3 or 4 week, you know, for your full first draft. 2 months, I'm really comfortable. As long as I start writing after I have most of if I have to do research. So I start after that. Sometimes I have to stop and go, okay, I can't remember how to spell such and such, you know, in forensics. Sometimes there's some really weird words that I have to stop and look up. I know I must drive my editor nuts.
And what's your favorite lookup word lately?
For some reason, there's always why is there always the same words that give you trouble? I cannot figure it out. Well, it's the breakdown of like DNA, mitochondrial, which sounds like an easy word. There's just words that I have to stop and go, okay, like 1, 2, 3, I can't spell this. And, you know, those pesky words that you seem to repeat a lot in a manuscript. I've been getting better. I sit down and kind of make a list of words I have a tendency to use a lot. And then I sit down and I try to come up with like 10 or 15 other words that are just as good. So, you know, I think when you're trying to get the whole story down and everything across, it's just easy. You kind of fall back in and, you know, put some of the same words.
So tell me about your new book.
The latest one that's out in this detective series is called Flowers on Her Grave. And it is in my main character, Detective Katie Scott. She's an ex-Army canine explosives, you know, handler. And so she came home, and she had been a police officer for a couple of years before she went into the Army with personal reasons. So she had kind of came back with a lot of baggage. She was able to bring her military dog home through a lot of red tape. So she's now working as a detective for their cold case unit. And it's kind of a new department, so they're trying it out. And so she gets a lot of really interesting, a lot of times people think cold cases are all homicides, and they're not necessarily all, you know, murder cases. They can be missing persons. They can be arson cases. So she definitely has her work cut out for her. And they didn't have a place to have her work. So what they did was they had extra offices in the forensic division. So actually her office in the cold case, the whole cold case unit is actually in the forensic building. So it's a little bit different. And she does have a deputy that's helping her. But this particular one is the third one in the series. All of them, the first two and this one included, they can be standalone. But this is the one where her aunt was found brutally murdered, and her uncle is the prime suspect. And to make matters more complicated, her uncle is also the sheriff. So it gets pretty dicey, and she's not supposed to work on that case. Well, you know, that's not going to stop her. So she's finding ways of, you know, checking some things out. She picked up one of the cold cases that was a very similar victim. The victim wounds are very similar to her aunt, so she could kind of almost shadow the case, you know, her uncle's case. So
I know you could shadow it, and it's a novel, but can we do, is it too close to reality sometimes when you're doing it?
You know, especially with just so many things today, sometimes when I do write, I think, I hope somebody doesn't pick up this novel thinking, oh, this is going to be a, you know, a summer read. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have reached out to me who have had family members being victims of serial killers and things like that. So sometimes, you know, I do think about that. Sometimes I do think that, gosh, you know, these are more realistic. It's not like you're writing a fantasy or more of a cozy mystery, which I love to read myself. You know, sometimes these are very reality-based, and the things that one of the things I'm actually very just very happy about, I just received a letter just recently. Since my main character suffers, she suffers through PTSD, when I first outlined this character, I really didn't want to make it seem, you know, people who suffer from these things, I didn't want to make it seem, you know, just very contrived and very, you know, like it's not that big of a deal. I wanted to make sure that it was like it gave, you know, brought this to people's attention so they could see in this character. And I've been receiving so many letters of people thanking me. And I just, that's like, if I never sell another book, just knowing that people just say thank you, you know, thank you for bringing that to people's attention so they understand, you know, PTSD or mental illness, you know, any of these type of things that so many people suffer from, you know, to the attention, you know, this is how it is. This isn't something, but that brings a lot of realism in there, like you said. So I do think about things like that. I do think about like, things like the politics of police departments, you know, mental illness and murder and all these things, you know, you do kind of bear some responsibility of how you present it. and it's you're presenting it as entertainment. So, yeah, you know, that's you know, I do think about that.
The problem with entertainment, and I say this, I love mysteries. Have you ever thought of going and writing, somebody asked this already, a cozy mystery or one of the other
I love cozy mysteries. I love these mysteries that are coming out where they have to do with, where they have these really cute titles like the cat and the quilt mysteries and things like that. And things you see on Hallmark, I'm a Hallmark fan. And I think, oh, you know, that's just, you know, such a nice story with a nice ending, even though there was a murder in it, it didn't seem that depressing, you know, as opposed to when you're writing like a, you know, a crime fiction, police procedural.
You took my next question. Okay. No, but
sorry about that.
Have you ever thought of putting, or if Hallmark came up to you and said, "Hi, we want to give you a little money and you help co-produce this mystery for our show, our network," would you do it?
Heck yeah. I would. I would. Because I think, you know, I love crime fiction. I love forensics. I love a good mystery. But also, you know, there's more to it than that. There's, you know, stories of relationships and just fun things. You can make, cozy mysteries are great because you can make them much more lighthearted. So you can concentrate more on, you know, fun, kind of quirky, upbeat characters. And of course, there has to be a love story.
They own an antique shop and they do mysteries on the side or something.
Yeah, I watch them. I actually do really like them. My husband kind of rolls his eyes a little bit. He goes, "Are you watching that again?" I said, "Yeah, I like it." Because it's not heavy. It's not like you're going to watch the end of it and go, "Wow, that was good," and then you're kind of depressed for the next hour because it's very intense. It isn't. It's more light, and I think we do need more just a little things that are, you know, lighter stories. There's a place for everything, really. That's why I had thought about doing some true crime, and it just takes a tremendous amount of time, and I think that's pretty serious, and I think it'd be a little depressing, and, you know, putting together a true crime about some specific event and interviewing all the family and that type of thing, and photographs and this person who was murdered or they disappeared or whatever happened. But, you know, that's something I've kind of thought about, and it's kind of at the bottom of my list right now.
What about, okay, this is from, and then I'm going to excuse myself from, I'm not leaving the mic. I got to do a quick promo for this. But this is from a young lady named, or young man, I don't know, named Paris with one R. Because next week's guest, Paris Alton Bonds, will be the lovely guest I have next week. So this is from Paris, not Paris Rand. Okay. If you do something on television, okay, do you have a main character you would use, like Flea Market or whatever? You know, they have the Flea Market murders.
A theme. Yeah, you know, I've actually been thinking about that. They have some really good ones out. I'm like, oh, that's a good one. I don't have one immediate to mind, but that's funny you said the flea market, because I haven't seen one of those yet.
You got to go to the bookstore or go to look online and find it.
I know. There's actually, it should be really endless. That'd be a good thing to sit and brainstorm and do a little research.
And who would you want to play your lead? You have all these female actresses.
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody from everybody from Brooke Shields to DJ from Full House. I know.
That's a very good question. I think the one that Brooke Shields was in wasn't as good as it could have been. She was the Flower Shop Murders? Because I really like her, and I think there is a better, I don't hate to say better, but there's a different one for her type of personality, because she can be really funny, but yet she can be pretty serious. And, you know, I think somebody along the lines of Brooke Shields, especially some of these actresses now that are, you know, they were pretty famous in their 30s and now they're in their 40s, and the roles aren't as plentiful in the big pictures. Man, they're great in, like you said, these Hallmark, you know, little series.
Yeah, I mean, they have the good ones can do this. The bad ones are like, yeah, I'm too big for the celebrity.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to, okay, you've been a consulting criminologist and you have a degree in police forensics and things like that. Have you ever thought of just breaking down what you do and putting it in a novel more or not?
Wow, that's a really great question. You mean kind of basic?
I try. I have my own sometimes instead of these people around.
No, that really is. It's interesting. I don't think about me myself like that very often. I'm always creating these characters in my mind. About a year ago, I was writing down, trying to get some PR stuff together for someone that was going to be, you know, helping me. And she's like, you need to just write down, you know, what would your perfect job be and what's your background? So I actually made lists like what you were saying and broke things down. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, there's a lot of things here that could be used, you know, not only for PR for me personally, but for a character. But it feels kind of funny when you kind of put yourself in there like that, or it does to me. But that's a really interesting idea. So you're saying, how about Jennifer, little town Jennifer, you know, there's a murder in her neighborhood, so they go and somehow she gets involved because she's got this background and she helps the police solve the case.
little Jennifer's good, yeah. Let's go have a little Jennifer yourself. You know, what are you doing here? Oh, little Jennifer's here. Oh, she was in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm just kind of nosing around, walking the dog.
Nosing around, walking a dog, and she solves the case, and the cop goes, yeah, right, lady, get out of the way.
That's right. Oh, there's the dog again.
Hey, don't hassle my dog.
Well, you know, he's funny. It's like since we've moved, you know, there's a lot of changes, and the way our front of the house is, he can see everybody walking by, you know, and it's a really neat neighborhood. And so people have been out walking a lot, and he has to like give his couple barks. Like, it's not like, hey, who are you? It's like, hey, I'm here. I like you. I want to meet you. He's just got a big mouth. He's just a loud boy.
This is from Davis. And Davis asked this question here. Davis, yes. I don't know if it's his first name or last name, but he says Davis.
I was going to say, that's a great name for a character, if that's a first name.
Well, I don't know. Steal it. I don't know. That's the question. Where do you get your characters' names and ideas?
Well, the character names have always been probably one of the toughest things for me. In fact, sometimes you want more, more recent names like, you know, Tyler and Jordan and names like that. But sometimes, you want more old-fashioned names, names that were popular, you know, 100 years ago. And I have this book. I bought a paperback used book. I don't know, it's probably 25 years old. And it's a book of baby names. And it's so great to thumb through it. I mean, you can go online and probably look at names too. But I have this poor, pitiful paperback that I'll thumb through because you have a tendency to kind of keep picking names with the same, beginning the same letter. And, or at least I do. And it's great to go through there to pull up names because, you know, you want your bad guy to have a good name or kind of a little bit different or at least you're hiding bad guy that nobody knows they're the killer yet.
Yeah.
But
just don't give me
I'll
my
write
name, okay?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, just don't give him my name.
I love your name.
Thank
That's
you.
That's one of those names. Yes. But I know if I put one in my book, it'll be like
Clyde,
Jennifer.
You remember Clyde Cussler and his books?
Yes.
Have you ever thought of becoming a character in, we were kidding about it, but being a character in your own book some way?
Well, you know, actually all the characters, aren't they a little bit, you know, part of that writer? But actually, kind of
like Cussler
yeah.
used him as a character in his own book for about two or three books.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
I mean, it wasn't, you know,
that's interesting. Well, you know, you have
the hero.
You have to be interesting enough, not to put anyone down, but. I'm just, it's weird to write about. I think what it is for me, it's kind of strange to write about yourself, you know. But I'll tell you, if they make a movie out of my book, I would love to have a little tiny part in it.
So you want to be in your own book?
I guess technically, sure.
That was like the woman that wrote Bones, the books was in one of the last episodes of the series.
Oh, right.
And so
that
I mean,
was on,
that
series was on for a while.
It was on for what? 10 years? Seven, 10 years? I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
It
seemed like it was on for
a good
show. I liked
yeah,
it
see,
at
I
first,
liked it
and I think after a while it just kind of got boring to me. I mean, I like the characters, and I like the actors that were in it. I don't know. Sometimes you
well,
have to know,
simple,
I think, you have to know when it's enough, and I think that's with even with book series, you know, how do you know when to end it? And do you end it with a bang, or do you just let them go, let your characters go off and live happily ever after?
Oh, sheesh. Why didn't you just take one of the characters you had, kill him off, and have the new character or one of the other characters
take over? Like,
yeah.
take over
well, okay.
and just keep on going.
Say,
that's an idea.
Character A is popular and wonderful. And then you know that character A has got a limited time for some reason or another. And character B, which you've used in other books, you use, and character A it meets an unsightly death. I didn't say how. And you get character B to solve it, and character B now is doing it, and character big say
right.
introduced
so, in well, wouldn't that, I mean, for some people, wouldn't they be really readers? Wouldn't they be really mad and not want to read anymore because you killed off that character?
Yeah, but
I don't know.
It would increase the viability of the character, I think, myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could have the character die, and everybody's like, why did you do it? You know, what was the motive, you know, whatever. I mean,
well,
Chester
and then
Gould,
you could add an extra level of suspense is that they, however they died, there was, you didn't find the body, whether it was a car going off the cliff and there was nothing left of the car, whatever, you know, you could always have it maybe open where did they die? Did they not die?
As I said, I was talking earlier to Max Allen Collins, and he took over from Chester Gould. And of course, Dick Tracy was injured in a car accident during the Gould period. And, you know, they all thought he was dead. And, you know, killing off Dick Tracy, come on. I mean,
right.
Dick Tracy is, you know, it's like killing off Superman. You never kill off Superman.
That's right.
You can hurt him, you can break his arm, his leg, whatever, but you never kill him.
No, nope. You can send him into a depression for a while, too, and they could be reclusive until they decide to come out into the world again.
Do you think, maybe I'm wrong on this, but do you think, you know, since it, is there a lot more forensic criminologists and out there to solve a case of, say, one of your characters' demises?
You mean in real life or in fictional life?
In fictional life. I don't mean real life.
It's, you know,
but
it's funny.
Your books are real to me anyway, so I know that.
Well, you know, it's funny with criminologists. There's what a lot of people don't know. They think of a criminologist, you know, being that person that's helping law enforcement solve a murder case. A criminologist can be just a person who deals with statistics. They don't necessarily, they're not necessarily a person that works on a case. So me personally, I don't think there's enough of them. I think these type of people, since they're not law enforcement, I think they add to investigations, especially if there's some cases that they're having trouble solving or if it's a serial case of some type. I don't think there's enough of them, quite honestly. I know there's people who get degrees and people who take classes. I have a master's in it, so I had to write a lot of papers. That just makes me shiver now. But I had to write a lot of papers, and my area kind of came out where dealing with, like, I would say my expertise is more in predatory behavior, which can fall in a lot of different categories, and goes into a little bit of, you know, psychology and the criminal mind and things like that. So I don't think there's enough of them. That's just me personally. In books, in fictional books, I think a lot of times authors kind of put a lot of different, the postman comes and
I can hear him anytime. Yeah.
He's downstairs and I'm upstairs. So, but anyways, I think a lot of times, you know, when you're writing a character, you kind of put several different, you'll put a detective and there'll be a criminologist as well, or they'll be, you know, they know a lot about, you know, chemistry and forensics. I think we have a tendency to put, you know, several different jobs under one character because it makes it more interesting, I think.
Quickly got you into writing detective fiction. Mystery fiction, not really detective.
Well, mystery, I've always loved them ever since I was a little kid. I mean, everything from Nancy Drew to Scooby Doo. I mean,
year, right, Jennifer? That was last year, right?
Yeah. But no, I've always just loved mysteries. I've loved, you know, just trying to figure stuff out, trying to see what fits, what doesn't fit. I like puzzles too. I mean, actual jigsaw puzzles. But I do like, I'll be out on a walk. This is an example. I'll be out on a walk and I'll walk by the same place, you know, a million times. And then I'll look and I think, wow, wonder why that is, you know, what? Why is the fence like that? Was that because, you know, it's like I'm always asking questions like, why is that like that? Or, you know, I'm always curious, the curious mind. So, and it's a lot of fun putting a mystery together.
I'm going to ask you a question that may throw the curious mind a little out of whack. Who's your favorite fictional detective?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Who's your favorite fictional detective?
Oh.
There's too many of them.
There's so many. That's a really tough question, but I go back so many. I mean, of course, who doesn't love Sherlock Holmes? But I really love Agatha Christie. And I think, you know, a lot of times, I mean, I read so many books and great characters. I love some of the new characters, and it seems like I'm always discovering a new one. But, you know, I always go back to, like, Miss Marple and, you know, and just those Agatha Christie characters and how clever she was at putting those stories together. So,
I'm going to answer Dana's question here. Who's my favorite? The 87th Precinct. The 87th.
Okay.
And the favorite villain is the Death Man. Just in case somebody's next question is going to be that, or message me, the question is going to be that. But... he's the Moriarty to their home.
Right.
I mean, oh wait.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And I love the 87th. It's not that I don't love you, darling, but I love the 87th, and I gotta put a plug in for my voice.
Oh, no problem. I mean, there are definite books that just, you know, characters that definitely, you know, make an impression.
And you notice those were written in the 1959, 1958, 1960
yeah.
up to 1975. So they didn't have the forensic, if I could say it, I'll be really good. Forensic that we have today. I mean, today, there's so much CSI around and NCIS with all the investigations. I mean, there it was pure shoe leather and detective work. It's not, I'm not doubting you as a novelist or as doubting you this, but, we have so much forensics in today's books. And then they just were straight detective.
Yeah, I love that.
Do you think you love that? Could somebody give you the honor of reiterating the 87th precinct? Or have you thought of going back and doing something like that?
No, I haven't really thought about that, but you're right, you know. The older, you know, like you say, we see nothing but all the CSI stuff. And I think we get kind of blinded to it with like all this technology and how fast it is or it isn't, that we forget that, you know, people going out, running down every clue. And I think you have to work harder. You have to pay more attention to someone you're talking to or the crime scene itself. Rather than, well, they'll come in and they'll dust for prints and anything else we find here. I think it is important. I think it's very clever, too, because it's a different way of presenting it, presenting the case. Because people, we make mistakes. Yeah. We don't see things. And it's amazing how many things that people don't see. Mm-hmm. They just like, oh, I didn't notice that.
But do you think somebody could reiterate the old way? I say the old way. The 87th Precinct. I don't mean Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes was a great
detective. Right. Well, you mean like kind of like the old gumshoe, almost like private, you know, private detective kind of thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dana and Spencer. Spencer is like the old detective's hurrah. Let me rephrase myself. The Robert B. Parker Spencer.
Love him.
You loathe him or love him?
No, I love him. He was amazing. The dialogue, you can learn a lot about writing dialogue from him.
And
from
what
Robert
Parker. Did you learn?
Well, I started writing screenplays before I really started writing, you know, full-length novels. And mm-hmm. one of the things you learn with screenwriting is it's all about action and dialogue. And you have to be able to write dialogue how it really sounds, not in complete sentences like you have an English professor looking over your shoulder. And with Robert Parker, it's like if you've never read him, look at his dialogue. They're just like three words. You know, it's just, I love Jesse Stone series. It's one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite characters. But the dialogue is just very simple and very like, you know, quick and no fluff, just basically what someone's thinking, just not going into a monologue. And there's almost like a rhythm to it. And in writing screenplays, you have to be more like that, unless there's a reason for a person to give a speech or a monologue. But if you want to write real lean and crisp with your dialogue and, you know, the action and really move the story along, you can learn a lot from Robert Parker's dialogue. He was the master
at the
dialogue.
I'm a Spencer fan myself.
Yes. He was amazing.
He took the buddy thing, the I Spy kind of buddy thing with him and Hawk,
yeah.
And it was that way, you know. And then he decided to branch out and give you other characters that was the I Spy kind of dialogue, you know. You had Six Killer and Spencer, and you had, you know, all the other. Spencer was still there, but he kept seeing friends, and friends were doing it because Hawk was in Bahamas or Mediterranean or whatever, or on another thing, and so they did that. Have you thought of doing that? Say, teaming up two of your characters.
Take them to another whole different location and bring in, like you said, they have a friend in, like, the Bahamas. And then continuing the story with that. Is that what you mean?
No, what I mean is, like, say you had Dick Tracy and Sam Spade together in a book.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to, you know, take two of your characters. Say
right.
you had a character in book A and a character in book B. And you teamed them together
I actually have thought about that. I do have a series with a very, very quirky, almost nerdy forensic guy, and he's a consultant. And kind of strange, but likable. And I thought about, but he's really, you know, I try to make him as brilliant as I can, as much as I can. But sees things completely, he'll go into a room and see things completely different than you or I would see. And I thought that he would be a fun character to bring into, you know, one of my more police procedural or detective, because he's kind of strange, and so he doesn't relate well to people all the time. And I thought that would be kind of fun to bring them together. I mean, he collects like dirt specimens, okay? So, you know, he's he's not the big partying, hunky, good-looking guy. He's just kind of a little scientist guy.
Well, hey, think of CSI, you know. But, okay, let me ask you, what is your current book? I want to make sure we get that promoted twice before I leave. Your current book.
The current book is Flowers on Her Grave, and that's a Detective Katie Scott thriller. It is out now, and you can, you know, there's also two previous books, but that's the latest. I'm working on the fourth one now. It's actually going to my editor's desk, so there'll be more in the series in case you enjoy it. There'll be more coming up.
Okay, but Flowers on Her Grave, Flowers there. I can say it three times fast. But
say it three times.
What? Watch me trip over my tongue each time. Now okay, that's the new one. Do you have anything else coming out soon?
Later in the year, I'm not sure what the timeline is, but I will have an Emily Stone novella coming out called The Case of Vengeance. And like I said, the next book in this series will be out in October, which is Last Girls Alive, the Katie Scott thriller. So there'll be things. You can go to my website or my blog website, which is authorjenniferchase.com, and I'll have anything new coming up. You can look at some of the old stuff, pretty much get information there. Leave me a message, say hi. No.
Yeah, I'm waving.
Okay, as long as you're waving.
Okay. You're gonna hopefully a copy of this show will be there so you can listen to this lovely lady and the idiot. I can say I'm an idiot. No. You can listen to the lovely lady, and she has some great ideas, and she really does. I'm wondering why Hollywood hasn't snatched her out, but that's my take on that.
Well, good. I'm gonna just take that portion of the interview and just have it playing on Facebook.
Anytime I'll say yes. I don't care. I mean, I love it. To me, it's fun.
Bennett. Bennett, you have the best questions, and it makes me stop and think, and they're just really creative, too, and I love that.
Well, I also have great listeners on the show, and, of course, sometimes this show also, this podcast goes over everywhere. I mean, I was in a supermarket recently, and somebody said, "Oh, you're the one that interviewed her."
Oh,
yeah,
wow, that's great.
It scares you when you're in line at Safeway or Giant, and you're alone, and you're, you know, in your wheelchair alone, and you're trying to do this stuff, and then they say, "Oh yeah, you're him." Yeah, I'm him. Okay, and you want to just sort of close the ground above you, you know. Have you ever had that? I don't mean close the ground, but you know what I'm getting at. You know.
When someone says
it's
something, like, "Oh, you're so," you know, not.
Go ahead.
So a couple people have asked me one time. It's like, "I think I know you," and they're trying to figure out. And it's not just about I look familiar. They were trying to figure out how they knew me, and it turned out that one of them actually had read my stuff, and that was really amazing to me. But most of the time, no, people people usually don't say that to me, which is fine. I don't mind being a little anonymous, as long as my books are in front and center.
Well, okay. Have you thought, and this is from David, not Davis? Okay. He wants to, David J, he says.
David J.
I don't know. But he wants to know if, you know, that I had, he said, I had an idea of teaming up some of your characters. Have you ever teamed up some of your characters?
You mean from different books?
Yeah.
I haven't yet, but that's kind of what I'm in the process of doing with the novellas, is kind of bringing them different characters, you know. It could just be for one case or one assignment, but I have been thinking about it. That's a good question.
Thank you, David J. Thank you. Oh, my God. So
actually, everyone's had really great questions.
Hey, well, you know, I never try to come with an empty deck. You know that. Every time I've interviewed you, you're the one that told me about your, not this show, but a couple of shows ago when I had this show, and you told me about your new book, and I was so thrilled with it. I was like, I wanted to write a blurb for it. It was that good. Now, do you go ahead.
No, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
But do fans give you, why don't you do this mystery? It's in our town or something, or anything?
I haven't heard that. I take that back. I have heard that, especially with Emily Stone. They go, oh, wouldn't it be neat if she was, you know, had to come over to, like, you know, somewhere in a European country or in the Midwest. I have heard that. And so, you know, I think I'm going to expand her my Emily Stone series a little bit, because she could do that. Something would bring her to another state. So I have actually moved to another state, so it can happen.
I know, but wouldn't the other state have rules or something that you had to govern yourself by? I mean, if you move
with Emily Stone, she is a vigilante detective. She's not affiliated with any police department, so she could actually, you know, go to other states. As far as my character now in this series, Detective Katie Scott, she could be asked by, since she's in California, she could be asked maybe by, you know, the FBI for assistance. You never know. And that could take her to another area.
Okay. Now let me ask, to the one you've done the research on this, do you think that the FBI or the police would ask a police officer, any male, female, or whatever, to go over and help them at all? Or do they do that?
The only time that it could possibly happen, and most people wouldn't know about it, by the way, would be if they had worked on a case in their own jurisdiction that was maybe a huge, maybe a serial case or something like that. And if, you know, if the FBI actually did the research and this person kind of came up because, oh, they solved the XX, you know, murder or whatever, they might invite somebody as a consultant to help or take a look at their case. It is possible. I think personally they should. I think there's a lot of really smart, brilliant people out there working on cases that we never hear about, but people within the industry know when certain cases are closed. It's possible. It's one of those artistic licenses.
Yeah, but okay. Say a case was supposedly solved 10 or 15 years ago. And I'm not trying to, I'm trying to give you ideas for this and any other writers out there listen and maybe you'll, no, I was going to say listen, maybe you'll work. Okay. The case was solved 10 years ago, but then somebody copies the motorcycle.
Copycat.
Yeah,
copycat. And by the way, this is just, I'm going to throw this out there. There's a lot more copycats on cases than you think. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, hey, you're the expert on that. I'm only a critic and a writer and a reader. So I know. And you know, and I look at your stats and things like that and your books. And since you hold certifications and everything in serial crime and criminal profiling, God, I mean, how many TV shows and movies and everything else? I almost say introduce Jennifer Chase or somebody else to do that, and I'm amazed with it. Now, does that, and I mean through you, but does that, if you see somebody that does something like, say, Jagged Edge, and gets the criminal profiling wrong, or gets the...
yeah.
Go ahead, get there.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, complain. I want to hear it.
I see things, and, you know, I know they do have consultants, I would hope so. But, yeah, I see things wrong, and I even see things wrong when people are, like, holding a weapon, too. And it's like, didn't somebody teach them, you know? There's a few things, but things are getting a lot better. I have to say they must have better consultants or people are just educating themselves and becoming more aware of it. Yeah, the profiling kind of bugs me for the most part. People ask me when Criminal Minds was just, everybody was watching Criminal Minds, and they go, oh, you must watch it. I go, I really like the actor, but I don't like the show. And I just leave it at that. So some of them, it bugs me.
When you mean some, I mean, do you mean like 10% off the top, or are you bugged?
I don't know, because I haven't watched a lot of them. I don't watch a lot of the series. Some of them will come to my attention that I didn't know about. People go, oh, did you watch this? Yeah, I think it's higher than 10%. They need to understand it. But I know some of the reasons why they do things incorrectly is because if they did it the way it's supposed to be done, we can't wait that long. You know, it's not. It's just like when they get their fingerprint IDs. I'm sorry, it doesn't happen in 3.5 seconds. I know. I've worked in a lab before, so I. There's just certain things that they do for artistic license and to make it more entertaining. And so I think they have to balance between 100% dead accuracy to entertainment. That's
exactly.
Unfortunately the way they have to do it.
Well, do you think there's ever going to be a show that has totally accurate? Even Criminal Minds, I think, does.
I think they can be pretty close. I think it can be done, and I think it just takes a little bit more creativity from the writers and the storyline to be able to, you know, if you're using, you know, things correctly and how it's really done, then you just have to be that much more making the storyline that much more interesting, I think. I think that would help balance it out.
But I always think your books are
fascinating. They didn't ask me. So I'm just teasing.
No, they should. You know, you are a talented and viable talent. They should listen to you more often.
Well, you know, they think of someone who writes, well, you know, when you write fiction, even though you understand these concepts, you know, in real life, they still put you under that. Oh, well, you write fiction. You write make-believe. So it kind of puts a little dark cloud over you a little bit, I think.
Well, let me do a little homework because I want to get back to that in a minute. On the 18th, I have the lovely Paris Alton Bonds in the hot seat discussing writing and everything else. On the 25th, I have Dina Remmel, and she is also a writer, and she's got a new book coming up. And on the 9th, yeah, we're off the 2nd, so you guys can take off the weekend, you know, make it a 7-day weekend, whatever. And on the 9th, Michelle Prince will be talking everything she does, and she does a heck of a lot. Okay? Now, let me get back to a question that's been here on my screen and annoying the hell out of me. And somebody said, have you ever thought of writing a true crime book?
Most definitely. But I shy away from it just because there's actually a couple of cases of where I used to live that I probably could put together a pretty good book based on one of the crimes there. But man, I tell you, I have a lot of respect for people who do true crime. It's a lot of work and it takes a lot of time away from, you know, my fictional work. So I need to learn balance. If somebody has any tips for me on how to balance these and get more done, I'm open to it.
Thank you, Jennifer Chase, for the hour and the time you spent in here. Give me the book that's out right now. I do know it, but give it to me and tell this audience where they can get them.
It's Flowers on Her Grave, and it is out everywhere where books and ebooks and audiobooks are sold. It's a Detective Katie Scott thriller. And like I said, I believe that they're running a special on the first book in the series. So if you happen to like this one, you know, there's two other ones before it. And thank you so much, Bennett, for having me on the show. And I love all the questions from people that wrote in.
Mm-hmm. Emailed in, whatever. Pony
or
Express.
Emails, or
know.
Yeah.
Even Pony Express, right? But please, I will say this, be well always.
Oh,
the other thing
thank
also
you. You too.
Is keep posting those pictures of your dog. He looks so cute. Put him in the water next time.
I will. He'll have his little water wings on.
And if you Jennifer Chase has a lovely website, and the website is? This is your
cue. AuthorJenniferChase.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram as well.
Okay. Everybody, good night. Be well. Fly right. Stay safe. Good night.